My name is Paul Bull, and the program title that we have is Aging and Changing, New Roles for Older People. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the changing world in which we live. Not how old people change, but the world in which we live that affects older people. My wife Carola is over there, and she and I haven't given a great deal of thought to this. We've been very active throughout our lives, but we suddenly realized that I'm now 70, and she... I dare say it. Well, she'll be of a similar age next week. So that qualifies us, I think, at least to address this subject. It doesn't qualify us to be experts on it, but it does qualify us to be at least addressing the subject, because I think when you get to be 70, you can talk about yourself as an older person. And so we'll be addressing it from that that perspective. Okay, let's talk about the changing world. I'm going to stand up instead of sitting down. Is that all right? Because it's hard to relate to this larger group when you're sitting in a chair here, and I think I'd feel more comfortable just standing here. And please feel free to speak up at any time. You're not interrupting anything. Now, I'm going to say some things that you all know, but it's important that we think about them together, because we have to look at our perspective of aging against that kind of thing that we all are aware of, but at the same time we need to think about. And by the way, I don't see very many younger people here, which disappoints me a little bit, because I guess I have the feeling that most of us should have been preparing for becoming older a long time ago. And probably you do, as I do, recognize that there were many things we just didn't think about when we were in our 40s and 50s. That we should have been thinking about. We should have been anticipating. And sometimes I wish that we could talk about this sort of thing with a group of younger people. There are a few, but most of you look pretty young. Okay. Many of us, and I include myself here in this room today, have lived through a time of greater change than almost any other time in the history of the world. There have been some drastic changes, as at the end of the Grecian Empire and during some times in the Roman Empire, but some of those changes took centuries. You and I have lived in a time when change has just taken place at such a rapid rate that in our lifetime we have gone from the horse and buggy to the space vehicle. I remember going with my father, who was a parish pastor in central Wisconsin, out to his country parish 7 miles away in a horse and buggy. And we have a property that we live on now in Wisconsin on a lake, and my father and mother picked out that property in the winter by driving around the lake on a cutter, in a Corson cutter on the ice. Because there were no roads and no transportation, and automobiles were not in vogue at that time. But that's in my lifetime. And I'm sure, you know, I don't think any of you are that old, but in my lifetime, we've gone from the horse and buggy to the space shuttle. And who knows where it's going to go next. We've gone from villages to cities. Most of us, I'm sure, grew up in small villages. I grew up in a town of 700 and didn't move to a small city until I was about 10 years old. So my youthful memories are all of the small town and the farm and pitching hay and shoveling manure and milking cows and that kind of thing. And here we've been city dwellers now for many, many, many years. Technological changes. I'd like to talk about that a little bit more later. But surely, some of you are farmers, I think. I've talked to some of the Iowans here, and many of them are farmers. Just think of the technological changes that have taken place on the farm in the last few years. just tremendous technological changes, not only in machinery, but in seeds and in pesticides and all the rest of it, some of the good and some of the bad. Support systems. I remember my father during the Depression worrying and worrying and worrying about what was going to happen when they got older, because the church didn't have a pension plan at that time. Pension plans weren't being funded very well back during the Depression anyway. And I can remember all of the people in Superior, Wisconsin, where I lived after I was 10 years old, which was a very depressed economy because it was a labor economy and labor just went down the hill during the Depression. I can remember the sick people who were just worried sick about what was going to happen to them. Well, surely older people today have a lot of worries about finances, but now we've got Social Security, we've got Medicare, we've got pension systems, we've got welfare programs, we've got retraining programs, we've got workers' compensation. There are just, you know, endless numbers of support systems. Not perfect. If you listen to Reagan, you'd think they were quite good, but nonetheless, they're not perfect. And but they're there. There's a base and a floor underneath most of us, composed of Social Security and all the rest of it. So that's a change. Then a change in rapid transit. Look how you can get places nowadays. You can jump on an airplane in Minneapolis and be in Seattle in about 4 hours, or around the world in almost no time. And you contrast that with the kind of thing that has happened to most of us in our younger days, and it's just an entirely different thing. Now, and finally, and there are lots of other value changes, the changes in values, personal values and social values. I'd like to talk about that a little bit more, a little further along. Now, let me ask the question. This is a starter for our discussion. Don't discuss it quite yet, because I've got a few more things to say, but how do older people, like most of us here today, how do older people build a role, I mean a meaningful role, for themselves, where life means something, and life has meaning for others than ourselves? How do we build a meaningful role for older people in a rapidly changing society? You know, do we change? Do we oppose change? Do we hook into it? What goes into building a meaningful role for older people?
Let me just... Communication.
Pardon?
Communication.
Communication. You mean TV? You mean TV and... Okay, very good. That's good. Not watching television. That's communication. You mean communications between people. Okay, very good. Right. That's part of it. Now let's just 1 minute, then we'll get into that. I'd like to talk about two aspects of change that affect us very closely and create problems for us. One is technological change. We are living in an age of advanced technology, and much of it is bypassing us older people. For instance, last winter I built a desk for my pastor and his wife to their design. It was designed to hold their computer. The console, the screen, the input thing, whatever that is, and then something else with disks and so on. So I built this desk in my shop. That's one of my hobbies, is shop work and woodwork. And I've got a shop in my garage with machinery and stuff. And I built this desk. And I brought it over to their house and set it up, and they got all these four components of this computer up there, and I looked at that thing. The only thing I recognized was the typewriter keyboard and the TV screen. But how it all went together and how they used it and what, you know, what it meant, I just didn't know. And she, next week I went back and the wife said, well, we've got our whole budget on the computer now. All I have to do is push this and push that and I know exactly what we're spending. And it just went right by me. It's a technological change that you and I have to live with. And, you know, do we learn it? Do we ignore it? Do we oppose it? How do we deal with that? The other challenge, I think, that particularly faces us is the shifting change in values. What people believe in. How people express themselves. What kind of things do you give yourself to? What kind of things do you support? Now, most of us, I'm sure, grew up with the traditional values, the biblical values, the values of hard work, conservative type values. What are we faced with now? Free sex? Young people travel around together. We've had quite a few of them go through Holden here, where I'm going up camping up in the hills, backpacking and so on. Most of them are not married, having a great time together. Most of us didn't grow up with that kind of a situation. Music. You know, we sang "Let Me Call You Sweetheart" and a bunch of stuff like that, and we listened to Guy Lombardo, and we. Some of us listen to some classical music and so on. Now it's rock, loud rock, hard rock, a lot of it. And, you know, it's sometimes a little difficult to deal with. And male and female, wow. You know, we grew up with some values that said women are this kind of thing and men are that kind of thing, and they don't mix very much. And women do this and men do that. Women wash dishes and cook, and men go out and earn the money and do the field work and so on, and sometimes they overlapped. But by and large, we knew who men were and who women were. Boy, that's getting difficult. I preached last night. You know, some of you heard me. When I got through, a young man came up to me and he handed me a sheet of paper. And he said, I want you to read this. Two pages. Front and a green sheet, I think you know what it was. How we deal with sexist language at Holden Village. I was using God the Father. You know, you don't do that anymore. It's identifying God as male. And it's not very clear that that's the way it is. Paul addresses brothers. You know, I say to you, brothers, boy, that's sexist language. Where's the sisters in there? I say to you, fathers, do this for your children. Didn't say anything about what mothers were supposed to do. So, what is a poor old preacher like me supposed to do when I'm confronted with trying to deal with sexist language? And I'm ingrained with that kind of value system that says that this is the kind of values that we espouse. And here I am stuck with my old values like this. And here somebody says, this is the way we do it at Holden. You expect me to do it that way? Well, okay. I've talked about 15 minutes now. So I think I've said enough. I've got more to say, but I've said enough at this point to try to elicit a few comments. We already had one here, a very good one. But what I'd like to have us talk about today is, in the midst of all of that change that's taking place around us, how do we, as older people who either are facing retirement or already retired, create meaningful roles for ourselves? I read a book recently in preparation for coming out here called Why Survive? He was talking about why survive past 70. And then he talked about how difficult it was for older people to find a meaningful kind of life as they get older. I don't mean just having fun, but I mean a life that means something. So here we are. I've tried to say simply and quickly the fact that we live in an era of great change. That means that today is quite different from when you and I were young. What does that say to us as we build our lives into the future? One more comment about that. Carol and I have spent a good deal of time with Indian people, Americans, Native American Indian people, and have been fortunate enough to have many of them invite us into their homes, into their groups, into their ceremonials, and into their tribal affairs, on reservations and in the cities and so on. And in the Indian culture, there's a very interesting attitude toward older people. Indian culture doesn't change very rapidly, and that's one of the reasons Indians are so alienated with white America, because it keeps telling Indians that they have to change and be like us. But in the Indian culture, older people are the honored people. They have the places of honor in the tribe. They have the places of honor in the home. They are the advisors. They are the ones who the young try to go to for guidance and so on. And it comes out of an entirely different culture than most of us in white America come out of. So the older people there don't have much difficulty finding a meaningful role for themselves. They become the teachers. They become the advisors. They become the role models, and so on. That's a little different kind of thing. Okay. I think I've said enough now. Why don't we just open it up and talk about that a little bit? You talked about communication. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think it covers a lot of ground. What got me thinking when I was, wasn't even 21 years old, he decided he was going to quit farming and he was going to take it easy. And he moved to town, got himself a rocking chair, and there's where he stayed. But he didn't stay there very long. He wasn't over a year or a year and a half after that when he had ended up in the grave.
Because he was just sitting there rocking?
No, because he made such a drastic change from working hard to the rocking chair.
Okay. That's he didn't find any role for himself in his older age except rocking in the rocking chair, is that it?
Well, that's the only thing that he figured was in retirement.
Okay. It wasn't a very meaningful thing, was it?
Well, I figured it wasn't, so I said to myself, if I ever get old, I don't think I'm going to do that.
No, sir. Okay, but how are you going to avoid that?
Well,
how do you avoid it?
Well, we take part in a lot of organizations. We've got a senior citizen center. We've got a lot of friends we mix with. And we take trips like we're doing now.
Okay.
And we do a lot of fishing.
Okay.
And some other things, I guess, down the line. But that's the main one.
Okay. All right.
But you have to start that early in life.
Okay, let's say more about that. That's a very good statement.
Well, you have to keep working that way all the time and not just stop a certain thing or look towards your retirement as a time to sit and have fun either, because if you don't have anything work towards something meaningful in your life, I would say, like, maybe if you're going to retire, to have a hobby like you're doing and keep up on reading materials and keep up with, talk with young people and learn their values and really learn what's going on in the world. And then you don't really get old.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's, you don't really get old.
Not mentally, you know, your body grows old and physically you grow old.
But that's not such a big deal.
No, it isn't.
I mean, I've been healthy all my life, and then when I was in my 60s, I developed asthma. And, oh, it's been really a misery. And I have to take 4 different medications every day. If I don't, I start, you know. And I went to Rochester with it, and he says, nothing to do about it except take those medicines, and that's not going to cure you. But I, you know, that doesn't affect up here, and that doesn't affect my spirit, but it sure does affect my body. And I suppose as we get old, that's one thing we have to deal with. How do we deal with our mind going this way and our bodies going this way?
Our church started a befrienders program.
Befrienders?
We're sponsored by the Wilder Foundation. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yes.
Anyway, we started out with 8 people, I think. And if there's anybody in the parish that goes to the minister, I'm a UCC person, by the way.
She says she's from the UCC.
They go to the minister if they have a problem, and it seems like most all of us, like one man had been an alcoholic, so he'll take any alcoholics. And I've had some extensive surgery, so if they know somebody that, you know, is going to go have the same type of surgery, they kind of hook the people together, and we go in and see them before they have their surgery or whatever and follow through. And my 70th birthday just hit me like I don't know what I thought that
was. Can you hear her back there?
No.
Not very well.
I thought my 70th birthday had to be the worst. My husband died shortly after 70, and I thought, oh boy, I'm not going to have much life left. But this program has just did something for me.
Wonderful. Now, how does that tie in with what this lady said? Now, she said a very profound thing when she said, in order to have a meaningful role in older age, you really have to begin earlier in life.
Well,
some of the things that are meaningful to you now, did you start doing earlier?
No.
Not really.
No. And I don't like to do volunteer work where I gotta say I gotta be there on Monday morning, and every Monday morning I gotta be there. I want something that I can go at my own speed.
Okay, that's one point of view now. Okay, that's interesting. See, because she says that the things that are meaningful to her now are things she's picked up as she got older. You're talking about more ongoing stuff. Okay, now those don't contrast with each other. I don't think there's anything against that. I think there's a good truth in both of those. The thing you have to have, though, to create that role is a group of people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the difference there, I think. You need a group. And that helps create a role for you, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's an interesting observation. I think I saw another hand. Yeah.
I would suggest that one of the most important things is an attitudinal one, and that is the acceptance of change. I think many people grow older resenting change fearing change rather than having a positive attitude about change. We mentioned, I think, very rightfully, the impact of technological change as being perhaps fundamental to many things in our society today. Certainly, it has affected the work ethic, the puritanical work ethic that we grew up with.
Yeah.
That is no longer necessary for a fruitful life. It was when we were children. And I think many of us have resented seeing the young people not adopting the puritanical work ethic with which we grew up. And it's no longer necessary in society. And it's a change that I think we must learn to accept, not necessarily with the corruption that comes with it, but as a point of view. And as you grow older, if you have adopted a positive attitude towards change, that change is something that can be good for you in your life, some of these other things can happen.
Okay. Take your point of accepting change or recognizing change. You think that's an easy thing?
Well, if your attitude is positive, it is easy.
How do you make that change if you don't believe in it? I mean, how does somebody who believes in hard work and long hours and gets satisfaction? How does he suddenly say, yeah, that's okay to work 36 hours a week and, you know, take off 3 days, weekend? How, do you find it easy to do that? I think that's, you're right, I agree with you that needs to be done, but it's one of the difficulties that I think we face as older people as the world changes.
Well, I think it's difficult for young people to accept change too.
Yeah.
I think that's a philosophical position of a kind, isn't it?
Yeah.
It involves introspection.
It certainly does.
Well, I like what the man back there said about attitude. I don't really feel that I have that much trouble accepting change. I don't always like it and maybe not always agree with it, but I think I have learned to not be resentful of it. And if you try to flow along with it, it becomes much easier.
Okay. Anybody,
some things you can't, I can't flow along with when it comes to the moral standards. I talked to my mailman in my parish, and he says he goes down the road, all these empty country houses, and here man and woman are living in them, not married, and once in a while they happen to be from your parish, and then now you have to start dealing. In my point of view, there's a right and wrong.
How do you deal with that?
Well, you try. You try to sit down with them even. And sometimes you succeed, perhaps for a while, and then afterwards it, because, well, you have to understand this is the new alternate lifestyle today.
So once you have tried to deal with that with them and no change has taken place and so on, then what do you do? You've got three choices then. One is you can say, you're no good, I won't have anything more to do with you. Or secondly, you can say, nah, forget it. Or thirdly, you can probably try to work for a different moral situation. I think all of us have those choices when we run up against what he's talking about. How do you deal with something you don't agree with, or that intellectually or morally are repugnant to you? You know, you can reject it, or you can withdraw from it, or you can try to change it. What is the role of older people in a situation like that? I think that's a very important question.
Just lead a good Christian life and try to tell others what it's about.
Okay. An example, in other words.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that's as much as we can do in a case like he was mentioning.
In other words, if you're going to be an example, though, you better be something.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, you can't then just withdraw and sit back.
But also, in your elderly, I think, and I'm not there, I don't think. I'm one of the younger ones of the group.
I noticed you when you came in. That's why I said there are a few of you.
But there. I guess my philosophy has always been to associate with younger people.
Yeah.
Their ideas aren't all that.
Okay.
Try to teach them some of the good points.
All right. You find some good points in some of the values that are coming up.
Yes.
Okay. There's a lady back there.
Well, my idea is just because everyone else is doing it, I don't have to do it.
Good.
Okay. All right. But you have to take an attitude toward it, don't you?
Well, to a certain extent, but just because everyone else is, that doesn't mean that I have to flow with the rest of the people.
In other words, you believe that
I can take my own stand.
You have some integrity of your own, and you have built a lifetime of a way of life, and you believe that that should carry on.
That's correct.
Okay. Is that a pretty acceptable thing, do you think?
Doesn't that cause turmoil for you?
No, it doesn't. Because everyone else is living together, that doesn't
mean
that I have to.
What I'm speaking about is the people that, because of certain laws and things that we have, find themselves in circumstances. Say a man and woman who are on Social Security. Sometimes they can't get married, because if they do, they lose one or the other one loses their Social Security.
I see some head shaking. Did you?
Not anymore,
she said. She says not anymore.
Not anymore.
Apparently that's system has...
Not on Social Security, but on some pensions.
Pensions, okay, certain pensions. Social Security, I think, permits people to keep their Social Security, but I'm not sure.
At one time, I can hardly talk, I'm sorry, but at one time, if a couple were married, then I think the wife lost her Social Security.
Yeah.
But they changed that because so many of them were just living together because
sure.
they...
Yeah, okay. So there has been a little change in that. The government has had to recognize that. And maybe that's, maybe you made a good point there. I think I saw a lady over there in the corner.
I find it very interesting. I have seven grandchildren, and their ideas are just as modern as anybody else's. But I can explain to them why I feel the way I feel, too, because they may not ever come across anybody who feels like Grandma feels about it, because everybody is so modern, they think anything goes. You know, when you have a 13-year-old granddaughter, things living together is all right. And it's because it's been done all the time and everybody in school is saying it, then it's time for Grandma to maybe explain why she feels maybe it isn't.
Yeah, okay.
And also, I'm a little bit disturbed about the work ethic when it comes to young people, because when young people have the idea that they don't have to do anything, they're bored to death, and that's when they get into trouble. And I think work didn't hurt anybody. We've gone from one extreme to the other, you know. Because kids don't have to do anything anymore, and then they're bored, so they go here and they go there, and they have to go to these slot machines and play games because they haven't got anything better to do.
Tell me something. When you talk to your granddaughter, or your grandson, and you know, they're into something that you're not too happy about, mm-hmm. and you sit down and say, no, Mary, I happen to see it this way. But if you've done that, how do the children react to that?
Well, they listen to me, but they don't make a whole lot of comments sometimes, and sometimes I think that this is the first chance that they have had to hear their opinion. It takes a while to sink in.
Do you feel that that has changed your relationship with them?
Not at all, no.
Not at all. They still a lot of love between you?
Oh, yes.
And,
I can't ask for anymore.
They like to be with you? And,
yes.
Okay, very good. You've done quite a job there.
2 weeks in summer and two of them for a week and a half and one I took with me on a trip.
Marvelous. That's okay. There is a role that is very important, I think. Yeah, she's articulated something about the role of older people in a changing time. I think that that's very good. You really have said that very well. So there is an identifiable kind of role. Yeah.
That's the point that I was trying to make. And as this man said, communication, I think we need to keep the communication open between the older and the younger people. And we can set our model. That doesn't mean they're going to do it. And we don't have to do things their way, but we do need to listen to them and keep that communication open and love them regardless of what they do, okay. Not accept what they do.
All right, that's a good point. Love them regardless. A lot of people can't do that. They make their love conditional on whether people conform to their particular point of view. And that's very destructive, I think, when you make your love conditional. Good point.
That's not love. That's not love, in my opinion.
Okay.
It's conditional.
Yeah, all right. It really isn't.
Swedish.
But a lot of people exercise conditional love. A lot of people do. Now, I think our Lord, of course, is the greatest example of that, in that he loved the sinner, you know. Didn't condone the sins, but he sure loved the sinner. And I think that's what you're talking about. Okay, yeah.
I'd like to make a little sort of a disclaimer by Mike in advocating acceptance of change. I didn't mean to imply in any way that one should accept that all changes that are of not good value. Any change, I certainly wouldn't advocate that at all.
No.
But I would just to use a biblical
reference. The most notable change in religion certainly came at the time of Christ, yes. From the Old Testament to the New Testament. Yes. A tremendous change.
Yes.
A tremendous change in thought. And we know very well how the Jewish leaders at that time could not accept that, sure. Would not accept that. There are changes in concept of morality, changes in concept of ethics that are occurring in our time, and I think we need to look at them, to examine them. My whole life has been spent on a university campus with young people, and there are lots of young people there who are good examples of the work ethic, not horrible examples. The attitudes that they have, many of my contemporaries abhorred the university campuses, college campuses in the 60s and the early 70s. To me, they were a very refreshing time because at that time, the young people were perceiving the lack of true morality in the older folks. The divorce cases, the people living together in enmity, the family life of real degradation. The people who were dishonest in their income tax reports, who were leaving lives of fraud, and our generation was doing that.
Sure.
And they were attacking this. And I think they were bringing about some very important changes. Okay. I think we needed to learn to accept those.
I think he's made a very good point, and that is we shouldn't sit here smugly and act as though our generation were all good and the changing generations are all bad. I can think of a lot of bad stuff that happened as I grew up, and a lot of corrupt people and so on. So we're not talking about good people and bad people here. We're talking about how we cope with change. That's what we're really talking about. Good. I think I saw a hand up there on the... Yeah.
If we go back to Jesus, when he met the woman at the well, and she had told this woman what she had done, that she had been married already 3 times, and now she was living with somebody that and they weren't married. And he didn't condemn her for it, but he reminded her of it.
Yeah.
And we can tell this story to this couple, and just kind of prick their conscience a little bit.
Okay.
Might help a little.
All right.
But we just still love them.
Okay.
And then he said, go and sin no more.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that the real key?
Love.
When they meet up with Christ, there's a change.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he changed, or?
What?
Do you think Jesus changed?
No. I mean the person who meets up with Christ.
Yeah.
There's where the change comes.
She went back and began to witness.
Right. She's the first missionary.
Him, and some change did take place. You're right.
Yes. That's where.
Yeah.
And through that period that he was talking about, a lot of those young people, college or wherever, were coming to the conclusion that life isn't just how much money you're going to make. Do what you do and do it well. And if you aren't making much money, that's good too. Where we have lived in a society, let's get all we can together.
Mm-hmm.
Greed.
Yeah. It's been a very greedy society. But I can think of times when I was younger that the society was quite greedy also. And I remember after World War II, when we had all been deprived of a lot of stuff during the war and rationing and one thing and another, boy, everybody went out to get what they could, and that kind of thing recurs, I think, in every generation. Okay, who else has a thought? Boy, this has been a lot of good stuff. Were you slapping a fly or did you wave your hand? Well, this what we've been talking about here now is one aspect of older people seeking out roles in life. Now, when I talk about roles here, I'm not talking about play acting. And I'm not talking about just being examples of something. We've dwelt quite a bit today on how older people affect young people. We've talked about a grandmother and her daughter. We've talked about being examples, you know, to people, and we've talked about admonishing people and so on. We haven't really talked about ourselves here. How we keep life meaningful in the face of rather severe change. Now, this lady here, I think, put her finger on one kind of thing. When she was faced with widowhood at around 70 years of age, and had not prepared herself for that, she sought out a new kind of role entirely, and that was within a group of people who were supporting each other and pointing directions for each other and so on. That's what I mean. Now that's one example of how an older person copes with the vast problems and change that takes place. Now that's different for every one of us. What kind of a community do you live in? Small town or?
No, I live in Minneapolis.
You live in Minneapolis? I see, okay.
But right. We do it. It is
lots of resources in Minneapolis.
There is, but it is strange because I do have a friend that lost her husband 4 or 5 years ago, and she just can't cope.
Yeah.
She tells me now yet that she cries herself to sleep every night, and a bunch of us have tried so hard to talk to her, and we just can't get through to her.
She lives in Minneapolis too?
Yeah.
In other words, she has not been able to take advantage of the
resources. Well, she does. She does, but she still can't cope with it. Just kind of seems a little strange to a lot of us.
There are two people who are coping with a similar kind of change in an entirely different way.
Yeah.
Isn't that fascinating?
Well, one thing good today is that you don't have to retire at 65. Companies can't fire you.
They can't force
it. They can't lay you off at 65. And then I had a little part-time job until just recently. And I'm 70. I'm over 65 a long ways. And you know, just working 2-3 days a week, would free me out with people.
All right, you're easing into retirement then.
Right.
Okay, that's another way of creating a role for yourself. You see, is to ease into retirement, not doing it all of a sudden at 65, which I think is a terrible shock to a lot of people. To suddenly at 65 just get chopped off. I'm a pastor. I used to be a pastor many years ago, and I see a lot of my pastor friends who just can't cope with chopping it off at 65, and then suddenly they are no longer able to express themselves the way they did. They no longer have the circle of friends they did. They probably can't even stay in the same town any longer. And it's a terrible jolt for many of them. And they haven't had that chance to sort of ease into it. My wife and I had a chance to ease into retirement because we quit. I was in the national office of the American Lutheran Church, and we left that when I was 59 and began to do another kind of work within the church. And that was a sort of work that didn't have any hours and didn't have any rules and regulations and one thing and another. We went around and did workshops and discussion groups and things like that. So we were able to sort of build a new approach to retirement. If I had stayed at the national office and then wham, had gotten chopped off, I think my life was a misery. You know, I wouldn't know what to do with myself.
You're talking here about a concept of retirement, which I think has to change. See, as the one gentleman out here mentioned, the farmer retired. He was going to the easy chair. Retirement seems to mean to lots of people inactivity.
Yeah.
Well, that's basically a wrong concept of what retirement should be, in my opinion.
A lot of people don't think it's wrong until they get into it, and then suddenly find that it's about the most deadly thing they ever found.
That's one of the points what I was trying to say a while ago about working to it. My husband died at 54 years of age, and I became a widow, And I've just kept myself very active, and I'm now 66, and I can't tell much difference in what I'm doing. I'm not working full-time, but I'm active all the time.
Okay. Are you in a big town or a small town? Or?
Well, I have been living in Minneapolis, but I'm ordinarily from St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, so you've been in a situation where... These two ladies have talked about being in places where there are lots of resources. Twin Cities have lots of resources. St. Louis has lots of resources. What about the small town?
No problem. I'm a ex-farmer's wife, and shortly after my husband died, somebody needed a reliable person to come stay with her kids. And it just sort of mushroomed for 2 winters. That's all I did. I still have a few connections of that kind and that to me.
Does that make your life meaningful?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Reach out. These young parents, they're busy. And all of a sudden, you realize how busy they are and how they need a sort of a built-in grandma once in a while. And that's been...
So you created a new role for yourself.
Well, I didn't create it. I just sort of fell into it.
Well, I'm sorry. That's a good way to put it, but when you fell in, you stayed there.
Well, no, I don't do it full time now like I did. I come home a week and I would rest, and I was thankful. I don't have that fear of coming home to an alone place.
Yeah.
And that to me was a big blessing.
Oh boy.
And I have neighbor kids in the neighborhood, and you know, just they'll come and visit me. That to me is a lift.
Wonderful, wonderful.
A new role for us was becoming whole in volunteers.
Yeah, that's right.
What are you doing?
I celebrated retiring from teaching by coming to Holden in September 5 years ago, and I worked at a laundry. Now I'm a librarian.
Wow, okay. Do you call that going up or down? That's great.
But that was also due to physical change. I could no longer do the physical work in the library.
How long are you here? All summer?
No, 3.5 weeks to 6 weeks at a time.
Okay, all right. I think this lady works.
I'm on the auxiliary at the Good Samaritan Home in Fontenelle.
Fontenelle? How big is Fontenelle?
800.
800 people, okay. You got a Good Samaritan home?
Yes.
And what do you do there?
Well, I'm vice president, and we meet every 2 months, build up for bingo, and do things for the residents.
Is this an auxiliary?
Yes.
Okay, very good. In other words, you created it. Does that keep you pretty busy?
Well, it does.
And it's meaningful to you?
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Another
I think I saw another
here. Retirement, I think when we think of retirement, we think of doing something, but one of my friends used to say that it's not retirement, it's retreading. Not retiring, but retreading.
Yeah, okay.
And I think that we can do that.
Yes.
In our small town of 5,000, we do a lot of volunteer work in the nursing home and different places. That's very meaningful.
Yes, all right. Yeah.
One of the other things you can do is work within your church with the group that's there. Now, last fall, we organized what we call the Mature Lutherans. That's why there's 14 of us here from Pullman today.
From where?
Huh?
From where?
Pullman, Washington.
Oh, you're from Pullman.
Yeah, we drug Leo along, try to get him out and into the world.
Okay.
You know, he's retired. He only gets in 50 or 60 hours a week now.
Leo was complaining last night this morning about the fact that he got dragged in here again. He'd only been here 50 times before. All right. We've just got a few more minutes now, so.
I think this couple back here should tell, they told me on the bus how they were foster grandparents to people. I think you can tell it better than I can, but that just intrigued me so much.
Tell it.
Really.
Well, we're from South Dakota, but our son was a pastor at Canby, Minnesota, was on the board of a Bible camp. And the year before, older couple had retired and sold out, but they didn't want to go to Arizona until fall. So they came to a camp and said, would there be any role that we could play at camp? Well, they debated a while, finally they said, maybe you could come and be grandparents. So they just wanted to be there that one year. So the next year, then, of course, they were looking for a couple to be grandparents. Well, our son kept coaxing us. He said, I think you could do that. So we finally consented, and we were there 3 years just to be with the children.
Oh.
And,
I thought that was marvelous.
Had you prepared for that by being grandparents? Do you have children?
Yes, we have children. Yes.
And you have grandchildren?
Yes.
And you had kind of related
well,
to them?
Well, we had.
You had a good experience with your own grandchildren?
Yes.
Okay, that's what this lady was talking about, is preparing for new roles. In other words, you didn't jump.
It seems that the camp was greater than it was.
You didn't jump into being foster grandparents. It sort of crept in on you, like you got crept in on you. Okay. Well, there's a lot more we can talk about, and I'm going to be around all week. And I'm going to have a different topic. One thing about Holden here, we're not supposed to say we'll continue this session next session. There are two reasons for that. One is, at Holden, a lot of people drop in and out. Some people want to go for a hike. Some people want to take a nap. Some people want to go and talk with a friend. And so on and so on and so on. So Holden tries not to try to tie people down be back tomorrow and we'll continue. But we will have sessions on some of these things relating to older people through the week. Tomorrow I'd like to start out talking about how many of us there are getting to be. You know, this has some profound implications, not only for us, but for the country. They're just really profound. And we'll try to make a session around that subject of how we deal with the growing numbers of us. You know, not you, but you'll get there.
I'm almost there.
Okay. You look so young.